Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports. It's a Monday edition of the show, which means it's time to talk some NBA basketball. We always save a segment on Mondays for our good friend James Holas, who joins us over the phone. And we have James right now as we get back into the swing of things. James, one thing is for certain, it's always great to get you on, but also not a lot happening in the NBA at the moment, which I think can provide us with some of the best talk as far as the abstract stuff that's going on in the offseason.
Yeah, this is when you get in all the weird debates and people get a little antsy as we wait for the games to roll back around. Or if you like the Golden State Warriors, you just have nothing to do, right? You just do nothing, absolutely nothing. So, yeah, it's always good talking hoops with you.
Oh, for sure. I got to ask you this much. Do you follow the WNBA? Does it itch any or scratch any type of basketball itch for you in the summer months?
No, it doesn't. I don't watch college ball. I don't watch the WNBA. I've been locked in on the NBA and NBA. I don't watch football. I don't watch college football. I don't watch anything else. I'm an NBA guy. I catch little bits and pieces. Like, I see that our girl Paige has been really killing it. I know Caitlin's dealt with some injuries. Caitlin Clark. I know our girl Angel Reese has been really showing out. She's been playing well. So I catch stuff on the peripheral from a lot of my followers on social media. But I mean, people I follow on social media, but I don't follow it myself.
Isn't it easier today to get tidbits on what's happening? I've always been a fan of the WNBA. I've watched it since it started when I was a kid. I think it was because in the summertime, if it wasn't baseball, there was really nothing else. And so I've always been a fan of the WNBA. It's got to be easier today for someone who is fringe, really casual, or lighthearted to at least know what's happening. I'm going to say like a decade ago, you wouldn't have known anything that's happening, right? Much less like players and how they're playing. Today, it's easier than ever.
Oh, yeah, the social media and the information age, now everything's at your fingertips, right? We all carry a supercomputer in our pocket. And just, you know, again, a lot of the storylines are more than just basketball, right? It's, you know, they talk about the personalities. I know that the WNBA All-Star event was a huge smash hit. And, you know, I know there was some personalities that really showed up and showed out. So, yeah, it's much easier now. And it actually kind of makes you want to maybe get into it a little bit. Maybe I'll pick a team next year and I'll start following along a little more closely.
Well, let's start by talking about one of your teams. If we move over to the NBA, your team of the Boston Celtics, the announcement coming out that Brad Stevens, who is the president, of course, of the Celtics, has worked out an extension for Joe Mazzulla to be its head coach for a very long time. When you look at the extension and the new deal, which I don't believe the length or the details have actually been released, we just know he's going to be there for a little while. What was your initial reaction to the extension?
Slam dunk, no-brainer. And honestly, it means very little. I think we've seen that, like, you know, almost the last decade, coach of the year means nothing. Guys can win coach of the year and, like, they're fired within a year or two. You can win a championship and you can be gone in, you know, 2 to 3 years. If it's very much an what have you done for me lately league. We know that the Celtics are kind of like in a holding pattern until Tatum gets back. We know that obviously Joe Mazzulla just won a championship, you know, a little over a year ago now. So I think he's pretty safe, right? There's no hot seat or anything. And he's kind of revolutionized the Boston Celtics offense. So moving forward, obviously Boston's in uncharted territory, and you know, but they want to give him a little bit of a peace of mind that hey, we're behind you 100%, and you know, moving forward, you're our guy, and I appreciate that. So that kind of stability for a franchise.
Yeah, and when I saw this announcement, I started thinking about, you know, the word culture gets thrown out a lot, and I think in the NBA, I think we use that term too often. You know, when we talk about franchises that kind of want to build a culture. With max contracts being shorter than ever, player movement being at an all-time high, I think it's really difficult to get continuity. And I think that culture is something that is not what it was 15, 20 years ago when we talk about the NBA itself. I think it's more prevalent in the NFL, but I think when we take a look at the NBA, it's completely different. Now, with that being said, I look at the Boston Celtics and I see the culture that has been built there. And I understand that Joe Mazzulla became the head coach with some really weird circumstances. He was not, it's not as if Ime was fired for performance by any stretch of the imagination, and we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. But one thing is for certain when you take a look at the Boston Celtics. They have had consistency. If it's Brad Stevens as a head coach transitioning to president, if it's Mazzulla getting this this extension, you just look at the way things are built within the Celtics organization. And James, I feel like they're one of maybe a handful of teams that can use the term culture and use it correctly.
Absolutely. As we saw in Phoenix, it does matter, right? Phoenix had a very talented top three, and there seemed to be no like connecting ethos for that team. And it showed. It was chaos over there. You spoke on Ime. Look what he did down in Houston. He went there immediately. The team took on a whole different kind of mindset, a whole different culture. Like, that matters. And having a coach that can also be a culture setter, that matters also. We can shift over to a team like Milwaukee, who had Coach Bud there. Coach Bud is by all accounts a great tactician, a good coach, and you know guys don't have anything bad to say about him, but. There's something to be said about having a guy who can set a culture, and he just seemed like his personality just wasn't like that. The big thing with Joe Mazzulla is he definitely is he marches to the beat of his own drum. He's very straight, forward, and direct, and I think he's very transparent with you know when he does like something, he doesn't like something, and I think that resonates with younger players and the veterans. He doesn't pull punches. It seems like he is he has a very aggressive style of coaching that he lives in almost all aspects of his life. It sounds like. And he does have a lot of personality. So I think all those things come together to it really imbues a certain spirit to the team. And Boston kind of like runs with it as a city. So it's really fun to see, and I think it's really cool to see.
Yeah, and I mean, I was thinking about this just the other day. When you look at teams that have that continuity, okay, I think Oklahoma City is building that culture, right? Sam Presti, to me, is a wizard. He's been absolutely sensational in this role for many, many years. I can throw OKC in that category. I take a look at the Western Conference. Maybe we have Golden State, right? I mean, there's been a lot of consistency within that organization, and I think you can bring in veteran players. They know their role when they walk in. I think it's a very short list in the Western Conference. If I go to the East, I put the Celtics on a short list as well. I think the Pacers have built that culture, and the Heat have always had that culture. But like I said, James, in my mind, there's five or six franchises in the NBA that we can truly use this term with. I think the Cavaliers are working towards that direction as well. But then I think you got teams on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Obviously, the culture in Philadelphia is dreadful. I think the culture in Los Angeles with the Lakers right now is dreadful. We know what happened in Phoenix, right? There's a lot of bad cultures right now in the NBA.
I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that about the Lakers, but
awful.
I think about it.
It's awful.
I think it's just kind of non-existent. You're right. I think it's kind of like they want to be positive, of course, and they say the right things, and you know they obviously treat their guys right. They pay Luka, but then you got this weird thing with LeBron, and that's where I think that like we talk about Joe Mazzulla being kind of like a culture setter in Boston, and I think like I'm all over the place, but Marcus Smart, they had to move off of Marcus Smart because. He was taking up too much of the oxygen in their culture, and they needed Tatum and Brown to grow a little bit. So when you come to a team like the Lakers, it comes back to LeBron James. Everywhere he goes, has sort of been the culture setter. He's been the backbone of what the franchise is all about. And I think the Lakers are really struggling to navigate how to move forward with him on the roster and still kind of build a culture outside of, hey, this is just LeBron and this is what we do on a LeBron team. So, yeah, I absolutely see that point. A team like the Wizards, you're right. What culture do they have in Washington? They're trying to build something. They've got a lot of young guys, but they don't seem to know who or what they want to be. The Spurs, we speak of culture. 100%. Coach Pop moved up to the front office. All of his assistant coaches. He has a very long family, a very big coaching family tree, and that whole franchise has been moving the same direction with the same ethos, the same mentality. So you're right. There's we can count on maybe one hand, maybe two hands with some fingers left over. The teams that have a definite culture, and I'm proud to say Boston is one of them. Golden State seems to be maybe. They have a culture, but it seems like maybe it's unraveling a little bit at the top from the management side of it. So we shall see moving forward. So, but yes, I think maybe we don't speak enough about how much a strong culture can direct the franchise.
No, and I don't want people to think that I'm taking a shot at LeBron James when I say I don't like the culture in Los Angeles. I will say that there has not been a lot of continuity. be it from the head coach all the way up to, I guess we could say general manager. I know Pelinka's been there for a little while now, but I do believe they are trying to set a new precedent, right? They're trying to set a culture. One of the aspects of the NBA, if we're talking business or whatever, I think sometimes the casuals and the lighthearts, they don't want to accept the fact that it is an agent-driven league. And when you have someone as powerful as LeBron James around, he's going to be controlling the narrative. That's not necessarily happening in franchises that have strong team-built cultures, right? That's what I mean by that. I'm by no way, shape, or form saying LeBron James is poison. I'm saying the Lakers are trying to transition, I think, to be more like a team like the Celtics. And that may be painful for Laker fans as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be a bumpy ride, right? And it's funny because it's almost like a first world problem, right? A problem that any franchise would be happy to try to navigate. Where, oh no, we're going from LeBron James to another Hall of Fame level talent, top three kind of guy in the NBA, and we're trying to build around them as we move forward with almost bottomless pockets and a new billionaire owner. So it's a problem. It's definitely an issue, but it's not a problem.
Correct.
And the Lakers, as usual, have kind of an embarrassment of riches. So we'll see how this turns out. But it is definitely something to watch.
Let's talk about potential player movement. Okay, because I think one of the names that gets brought up literally every single summer, you and I have been doing this now for a few years, James, and when I go back and I look at the potential player movement throughout the summer, the name that always gets brought up is Trae Young, and this guy is still wearing an Atlanta Hawks uniform. How odd is this to you?
Speaking of culture, that's another thing. Like, what exactly is going on in Atlanta, right? They made some really good moves, personnel-wise, but what exactly are they, right? They have a point guard who's plays a little bit if you squint like Steph Curry, but he's not Steph Curry, and it just it just shows you like how far away he's not from being Steph Curry the way he plays. They don't have the pieces around him. They've made several moves over the big swings over the last couple of years that didn't pan out, and we're not exactly sure what Atlanta's doing. And again, Trae Young, he's at that part of his career where Luka just got his extension. All the guys around him are pouring out who they are. We're not exactly sure what Trae Young is as far as he's a great scorer. He's fun. He's box office a little bit. But does he drive winning? They had that one year they got to the East Conference Finals, and since other than that, it's been very mediocre in Atlanta. So we're at this point in the NBA where having a weakness in your lineup like Trae Young, a defensive weakness, it almost is untenable. If he's not really like a top three kind of offensive guy, and he's not. So he's an undersized point guard, and at one point that was all the rage. But we're getting to the point where can you win with an undersized point guard who's not Steph Curry? And he's not even Steph Curry's not even undersized. Can you win games with get deep into the playoffs with a guy like that? Can he be that kind of engine? I think the answer is yes. The roster has to be very specifically built, and I don't think this Atlanta roster is built like that. So, but what do you do, though? Because he's still an asset. He's going to want a lot of money. That second apron rules over everything. Do you give him max money? What team wants to give him money? These are the kind of things that second apron has wrought. And, he's at an interesting crossroads in his career.
And I also think that any time you read a report that there will be no long-term extension, right, they're not going to talk about an extension this summer, it's not going to happen, immediately that kind of translates into, well, he wants out of Atlanta. And I have not heard that. I don't know if you have heard that. That doesn't seem to be the case. I don't believe Atlanta would openly look to move him, but it does seem like it's almost inevitable at this point in time, right? Because what you run the risk of is essentially losing him for next to nothing. And if you are the Atlanta Hawks, a team that was very aggressive this past offseason, if you can't lock up a long-term extension, I understand why that talk comes about. Where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And I think that's what puts the Hawks in this particular situation. If you can't lock him up long-term and you're not willing to give him the money, you probably need to move on because you're in a spot where you cannot afford to lose him for nothing.
Right. There's a certain level of player where if they're not on the contract, for at least two or three more years, questions start to be raised because what exactly are you doing? And he obviously that class of player. The same thing that people are whispering about LeBron James right now, right? He's on a one-year deal. He's going to be a free agent next summer. And that kind of instability, that kind of for lack of a better word, insecurity is not something we see with players of his ilk. And like you just said, it comes down to, most times, it's almost like a almost general rule of thumb in the NBA. If you're not going to extend them and they get to, they started in that last year, you might as well trade them because it becomes a respect thing. And a lot of stars at a certain level, oh, you want to wait and try to play out the string with me and play hardball with me? I'm good. I'm going to get my money somewhere else. The new wrinkle, of course, is what team's going to have the money to try to pay Trae Young as a free agent, you know, $50, $55 million that he's probably going to want. And there's not a lot of teams right now. So this is a very interesting cap environment, a very interesting time in Trae Young's career. Very curious to see how it plays out.
Again, James Holish joining us right now as we talk about the NBA, as we've kind of hit this dead time with football ramping up. I know that's where the excitement is, but there's still some storylines floating around in the NBA. In fact, just a couple of days ago, we got to see the release of Christmas Day, and I know a lot of people look forward to it. It's a tradition in the NBA. The NFL is trying to embark on some of that tradition within the NBA, playing on Christmas Day. The slate, it has the staples, right? LeBron James, we get to see Steph Curry, we're going to see the Knicks, we're going to see the Cavaliers. Do you get excited about the schedule when we hit August and we start seeing little tidbits like this come out for the season? Is this something you look forward to?
I normally do because normally the Celtics are higher on the schedule. But no, as a basketball lover, I do because they do a good job, I think, the schedule makers of making sure it's some pretty traditional rivalries or even some of the more recent, maybe not rivalry, but some of the more recent, tightly contested, opponents. Who maybe have some kind of contention or whatever. So they do a good job of making sure that it's some entertaining matchups. So I do enjoy watching the schedule come out.
Now that we have most of the player movement done, right, for the offseason, is there a particular matchup that you can't wait to see? Right, like after the Luka and AD deal last year, it was can't miss TV when Luka went back to Dallas, right? With all the hoopla and everything that went down with that, like it was can't miss. I'm not saying it's not this year. I think that intrigue factor is going to be there for at least another season. But I don't know if that's like the marquee matchup where you're looking forward to a player going home or a player going toe-to-toe with another. What is it for you? Is there one matchup you're looking forward to?
Absolutely. The Thunder, when they face off against Kevin Durant and his Rockets, we all know, like, Kevin Durant was everything in OKC. We know the story, the heartbreak and the hurt from the Thunder fans. But now they just won another one, and they have their new MVP of the league, you know, fresh, young player in his prime, their new star. But, it's, you know, I see the way that the Thunder fans talk about and talk to Kevin Durant on social media. The pain is still there, which is fascinating because, like, you if you marry this amazing new woman, and you still are maybe slinging barbs at your ex who left you. You know, like, what's really there? So it's an interesting dynamic, and obviously Kevin Durant, you know, we never know what he's thinking, but he has to respect and miss his time in OKC, and he moved on, he's done great things, and he's fallen on hard times lately as far as winning-wise. So it's interesting to see him go to a situation with a team that is young and up-and-coming, and he's facing the current champs, and the current kind of top dogs in the NBA. And he's, you know, Kevin Durant's in his twilight. So it's interesting to see him, the old grizzled scoring vet, going up against a young and such a talented Thunder team. So that's one I'm really interested to see.
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily like talking about this kind of stuff, but I'm going to throw it out there because, again, Kevin Durant made a little comment. I think he was joking about OKC and their title. I think he said something like, finally, they finally got one or something like that on social media, and a lot of people got upset about it. I do believe that legacy is a big part of a superstar's mindset, right? They want a legacy. When they try to downplay it, I don't buy it. I think it is important to them. And I can make a reference. I truly believe that in hindsight, Shaquille O'Neal wishes he would have never left Orlando. I truly believe that. Just watch this magic moment. You see the way Shaq is talking about his time in Orlando. He's sitting back at the poolside with Penny, right? I think hindsight, he wishes he would have spent his entire career with one team. I have to believe that when it's all said and done, especially if Kevin Durant does not win another championship, with the way historically those two titles in Golden State are viewed, I think a little part of him wishes he was still in OKC. I really do.
I agree with you. I think some part of him must miss it because he was treated like he was treated like royalty, and there were a lot of good things there. They'd won a lot, but it was really tough. You know, I think when that burner account came out where he infamously tweeted that about how we were never going to win with Westbrook from that burner, that shows that he, the frustration was there. Now, I normally agree with you about legacy. In Kevin Durant's case, I don't. Kevin Durant is a different kind of cat. He marches to a whole completely different drum.
That's fair. Yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
Right, like, he's made it quite clear. Like, he's like, I feel like I'm, and, you know, some players will come out and say certain things about wanting to win championships. And all. He said, look, I'm mastering my craft. I love what I'm doing. He seems perfectly content. I'm going to score my 28 points. I'm going to get my, you know, I'm going to be efficient. I'm going to be a scoring maestro. And, yeah, everything else after that, like, I got my two championships. I got my two final MVPs. I tore my Achilles. I've come back. I'm playing with house money right now. That's what it feels like for me with Kevin Durant. He's just kind of out there just trying new stuff, finding something to – he doesn't know kind of what fulfills him as an NBA player. He's trying new stuff. So I agree with you about the legacy thing in every case, except for Kevin Durant. I really think Kevin Durant seems to be, if not comfortable in his own skin, he's comfortable being who he is. And that comment he made about the Thunder basically saying, oh, it's been 10 years, it's about time – someone else was ripping him and trying to joke him about, how you got to watch them. You have to go watch them raise their banner, you know, the opening game or whatever. And he was just like, I mean, he was just, you know, he's trading back and forth with fans on Twitter. So, yeah, it's I am going to be fascinated by what his legacy looks like at the end, because we've never seen a player of his ilk, of his level, who's kind of been such a nomad late in his career.
He is James Holas, kind enough to join us each week. See, there's still some definite storylines to get into with the NBA. James, always a pleasure. Before I let you go, let's talk about where we can find more of you.
I'm transitioning where the sky is blue. My favorite player growing up was Scottie Pippen, so I'm at Snotty Drippin. I'm also on Threads and formerly known as Twitter. I just I haven't talked too much of anything, but I was following along with the best scorer ever debate the other day, and really interesting with our boy Kevin Durant. So yeah, come over there, talk life, and make jokes with me on any social media platform at Snotty Drippin.
Love it, James. Always a pleasure to get you on. Appreciate the time.
You are the man, as always, brother.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.